The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One of the statements that the Buddha made, that I think is useful to keep in mind, is the statement that whatever you think about frequently becomes the inclination of your mind. So whatever you think about regularly becomes a disposition, becomes a habit of mind. And one of the very interesting aspects of mindfulness practice is to begin tracking what you think about frequently, what goes on in your mind, and what are you, what habits are you reinforcing, what inclinations, dispositions are you reinforcing by what you are regularly thinking about. And in noticing that, then also the mindfulness practice can help show you that you have some choice in the matter of what you think about. That it's not a matter of just merely thinking away and being mindful of it, being aware of it, but you know, that you can stop thinking about some things, maybe not for a long time, but you can at least put it down for a little bit. You can sometimes distract yourself and focus on something else if what you're thinking about is not useful. Or sometimes you can pick up whole new things to think about and or different ways of looking at this world. And one of the remarkable things for me about having done meditation practice is the way in which it changes the state of my mind or state of how much going on in my mind so that I'm not preoccupied. And a mind which is not preoccupied is not rushing ahead, is not filling itself with thoughts and ideas. It's not seeing the world through its filter of its concerns, but there's a kind of freshness or receptivity or to perception. There is a less of a tendency to see the world through the filter of what we want and what we don't want through our aversions and desires. And instead, to be, you know, to be calm, to be contented, to be peaceful, to be unpreoccupied, to come out of meditation and just be, in a sense, without needing to do anything, was a new kind of experience for me as I was starting my meditation practice. And it kind of opened up to me a range of experiences, of ways of being in the world, which were somewhat new for me. To have regular contact with just beingness, regular contact with some calm, contentedness, and regular contact with just seeing the world fresh and kind of like nothing needed to happen, nothing needed to be done. I didn't need to prove myself to anybody. Just here I was, coming out of, they ring the bell for meditation, and my mind wouldn't automatically pick up its usual concerns and desires and wishing to impress people or wanting to have some certain things. I just open my eyes and I'm there. So that was nice enough, but it was even nicer. Because one of the most common states of mind and one of the most common thoughts or feelings that would come out of that, out of meditation, was one of gratitude. And this is the topic for today, is gratitude. And it's hard to be grateful if you're preoccupied. You just, you know, there's not much space in there for it because you have important things to think and do and accomplish and complain about. They say that the opposite of gratitude is complaining. So if you track, again, use your mindfulness to track what goes on in your mind and you put... Not that you guys complain hardly at all, but if you put the number of complaints you have on one side of the scale and the number of grateful thoughts you have on the other side of the scale, which way would your scale tip? And is that the way you want your scale to tip? And if it's more the complaint side gets the predominance, then perhaps there's some way of tipping the scales and getting more gratitude. The remarkable thing for me in discovering this whole world of gratitude was it didn't exactly come from reflecting about what I am grateful for, which is a beautiful thing to do. But it didn't come from thinking about, you know, the list. But rather it came from a way of being, from just being present in this relaxed, content, open way, calm way, peace, being peaceful. And in that state, I'd go out and look at a tree, or I'd go out and just meet a friend, or I would just walk down the street, or just be. And with that seemed to come a sense of gratitude. And now why? I never thought about exactly why, I just was. And in fact, part of the reason, you know, when I was growing up in Buddhism, it was through in the Zen tradition, and then the custom there is always to end a session of meditation with a bow. You bell ring and you bow. And for that bow, for me, became a way where I could express that gratitude. And it often felt incomplete if I didn't have some way of expressing the appreciation, the gratitude that I felt. And because some things need to be expressed. You know, it's not enough sometimes just to feel something, but they kind of come to completion, or they get developed or something if we bow. I remember after spending 3 years at the Zen monastery at Tassajara, where we do it a lot of bowing to people. You know, it's like the, you know, if in doubt, bow. And you'd have to bow. Every time you pass someone in the pass, in the monastery, the hallways, you'd have to bow to them, and they'd bow to you. And it was so much that sometimes people would kind of walk the long way around, so they wouldn't have to bow. But it was a beautiful thing. And so when I left the monastery, where you didn't see many people, it was like, I don't know, that sometimes there were 50, 60 people who lived there. After 3 years, the day after I left, I was up at College Avenue in Berkeley. This is a kind of a city, right? Lots of people. And there were all these people passing me by, and all these people. And I had this appreciation. I was just there. I felt appreciation for people, and people are so beautiful. And I really wanted to bow to people. But I thought that, you know, you can't really do that in public with people who are strangers, walk up to them and bow, and it just wouldn't work so well. But I felt this kind of built-up feeling inside, like I have to bow. And then down the street, about half a block across the street, I saw someone who had been to Tassajara that summer. And I ran over after her. I said, stop. I need to bow to someone. So maybe, maybe I was addicted. But I guess there's worse addictions. Gotta have my bow. Gotta have my expression of gratitude and appreciation. So maybe it's, you know. So this idea that gratitude can come not necessarily from any reflection per se, but just from a way of being, was, you know, one of the big treasures or jewels that I discovered through doing this practice that we have. And how much of our life actually is a gift? How much of our life, you know, it's hard to be grateful if you think that everything depends on you and you have to make everything work. Or it's hard to be grateful if you think that you deserve whatever you're supposed to, whatever is coming your way. But if you have a sense that it's that things have kind of occurred as a gift, that's beautiful things, things that you really appreciate, you can't quite take credit for them, but you really appreciate having these. I think that one of the kind of more natural kind of arisings is some sense of gratitude and appreciation for that. And so, you know, the sense of calm and contentment and peace and joy that has come through meditation, sometimes a sense of connectedness to the world, kind of intimacy with the world and others that comes from having this open eyes, open clarity of seeing. I can't quite take credit for it. I mean, I did sit down to meditate, so, you know, as opposed to some of the other things I could have done. But there's something about the deeper or the fuller experiences of meditation where they don't lend itself very well to interpreting or feeling as, this is mine. I'm the one who's, made it happen. There's something about it's gratuitous or it's free or it just seems to arise in the environment. And in that, maybe that's the reason why the sense of gratitude can arise and be there. And then in recent years, there's been a lot of research done on gratitude. I think now there's a whole field of psychology called, I think it's called positive psychology, with the idea that it's supposed to be the antidote to negative psychology. The antidote towards the psychology that mostly focuses on pathology, on suffering and how to... But this is kind of... And I suppose Abraham Maslow was part of one of the great grandfathers of this whole positive psychology movement. And so they're studying particular, positive emotions. And so one of the emotions they're studying is gratitude. And it's delightful to see these kinds of studies. And they're finding that gratitude is a really good thing. It's better than your vitamins. And they've done experiments. They have people, for 8 weeks, every day, they have to write down 3 or 5 things they're grateful for. That's one control group. The other control group writes down what they have to complain about. And another control group writes down only things that were significant that day, but with no emphasis on whether it's something they were grateful for or not grateful for, just something significant. And then they had a group, I guess, who did nothing. I forget. But I don't exactly remember the results, except that it was over the top beneficial to spend that list of 5 things you're grateful every day for 8 weeks. That somehow, remember, what you think about regularly becomes your inclination. That's something that somehow changed people in such a way that they were much happier people. Also, I'll read a passage that kind of summarizes some of this research. A large body of recent work has suggested that people who are more grateful have higher levels of well-being. Grateful people are happier, less depressed, less stressed, and more satisfied with their lives and social relationships. Grateful people also have higher levels of control over their environments, personal growth, purpose in life, and self-acceptance. Grateful people have more positive ways of coping with the difficulties they experience in life, being more likely to seek support from other people, reinterpreted and grow from the experience, and spend more time planning how to deal with the problem. Grateful people also have less negative coping strategies, being less likely to try and avoid the problem, deny there is a problem, blame themselves, or cope through substance use. Grateful people sleep better, and this seems to be because they think less negative and more positive thoughts just before going to sleep. Whilst many emotions and personality traits are important to well-being, there's evidence that gratitude may be uniquely important. First, a longitudinal study showed that people who were more grateful coped better with a life transition. Specifically, people who were more grateful before the transition were less stressed, less depressed, and more satisfied with their relationships 3 months later. Second, 2 recent studies have suggested that gratitude may have a unique relationship with well-being and can explain aspects of well-being that other personality traits cannot. So it's pretty good. So it's interesting to have this kind of research, and it's statistical results, right? So it probably doesn't relate to you. You're probably the statistical anomaly. No, I think there's all these beautiful basic qualities that we have that we don't have to leave to chance, and you don't have to wait for your meditation to get settled enough to hope that doesn't kind of you walk out and you see the trees and you're grateful and something. But you can actually, if this idea of gratitude is meaningful for you, or you think that it's meaningful enough to experiment with it, you can run the experiment yourself. You can spend some time actively considering what you're grateful for. You can actively, the very common exercise that's given now in these researchers and books and various places is to do gratitude lists. It seems to be the most common suggestion of how to develop gratitude is to have a list every day, spend some time coming up with a list of 5 things you're grateful for, maybe for that day or just in general. I would think that most people will be able to find 5 things they're grateful for if they think about it. And it might take a while to kind of get into it to understand. But there's so much that our life gets so much tremendous support. We live in one of the most humanly interdependent economic social systems that the world has ever seen. And so much of our life is dependent on other people providing the infrastructure for it. And there seems to be a correlation between the more we consume and are supported by the tremendous network of people, and the less grateful people are. it's been pointed out that people who are more subsistence livers, living, close to the land or poor, or have to take care of themselves more and feel the connection to maybe to nature, that they feel much more grateful for their life. But how many of you have been, when you drove here today or walked here today, were grateful for the people who lay down the asphalt, or the side with the cement in the sidewalk, or who designed the car that allowed you to come here. You can go on and on and on. There's a tremendous, tremendous network of people who have made it possible for this day to be the way it is for you. And it's very easy to kind of take that for granted and just kind of go ahead and, I've lived in different countries around the world. And here in this country, if I need to, install a new telephone in my home, if the repairman doesn't come between 8 and 12 o'clock, as they said they would, in the next day or so, it's like an imposition, it's a problem, why aren't they? And other countries I've lived in, if they come within the first 2 or 3 weeks, approximately, to install the phone, you're really grateful. That's really special. You're so lucky to have a phone. And here it feels like, it's a right, to have a phone come in at a certain time. And, we have important things to do. And why not feel grateful of things that we take for granted or we think that we have a right to or we expect them to be a certain way? I don't have a good answer for that, but I do know that if you get settled and calm, if you have less stress, if you're less driven by desire and wanting to accomplish things and do things and get things, and if you're less driven by fear and resistance and aversion to things, then I think it's a lot easier to feel grateful. Just kind of feel, oh, look at that. They came. Isn't that nice? And it's a lot easier, but then it works in reverse as well. It's a lot easier to feel calm and relaxed and present if you're grateful. And so to spend some time reflecting on what you're grateful for, I think creates a wonderful feedback loop back to doing something like meditation. What would happen if you started your meditation sessions with an exercise in gratitude? Thinking about what you're grateful for before you start sitting. Would that change kind of the mood, for the meditation? So I'm curious now to hear from some of you. What are the conditions that support you to, or make it more likely for you to feel gratitude?
simply just the Buddhist practice.
So the Buddhist practice.
Very grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So it's grateful to have the practice, and the practice itself is a condition for more gratitude.
This is something Cheryl and I discussed many times, and I don't know if people really realize it, but in a lot of places in this country, there's people who are in sitting groups of just one person, and they don't have access to the Dhamma. And in the Bay Area, we're just so fortunate how much opportunities we have to practice. I mean, we've spoken to people around the country, and it's just they're so envious is not the right word. I mean, it's just so wonderful the opportunities we have to practice here.
For me, I feel very grateful when I slow down, and I also have a practice of when I feel frustrated or I think something isn't going well or the way I want it to, I turn and look at what is going well, and there are thousands of things every moment.
Yeah, it's true, you know, 99.9999999% of what it takes for us to live successfully is not up to us. And then we complain about the 0.00000001% that, you know, that somehow, you know, issue of the moment. Yeah.
I'm just thinking the flip side of not being gratitude is the paradigm of not having enough. And the idea of abundance is, you know, the idea of tied into the amount of possessions or money that you have. And so the only way to have that sense of abundance is to have a sense of gratitude for what you have. That's the only way to escape the paradigm of scarcity, not having enough.
Yes, I think so too. It's very painful in our society. I mean, so much suffering people have around haves and have-nots, and some of it has to do with people's happiness, and has something to do with the social context of where they're at. I mean, some people who are poor and unhappy in their poverty in this country have much more than people who are well-to-do in some countries in the world, in a relative. And some people have a lot of money in this world and don't feel like they have enough. Many years ago, I met a man who he called himself a psychoeconomist. His specialty as a therapist was to work with people who had a lot of wealth, but who realized they had a psychological problem because they had a strong feeling that they didn't have enough. Like he talked about a man who had $40 million and was really worried he didn't have enough to make it. So they come to see him. Probably a lucrative business. But the idea that it's a painful area in life, what have and have not, and all this stuff, and it's hard to, it's very delicate to kind of even say anything about it because of how much suffering it involves. But I think one of the beautiful things about the meditation practice is you don't have to say anything. But as the mind settles from its conditioning, as it settles from the preoccupation with desires and aversion, settles from its preoccupation with what we feel we need, settles with preoccupation with comparing ourselves to other people. There's a kind of a deconditioning, deconstruction process that goes on in the mind. And when the mind has managed to deconstruct itself from all its thought patterns and preoccupations and just can be present and alive with some kind of clarity and openness, then there is a kind of sense of abundance there and gratitude. And some of the most grateful and wealthiest people I know are people who have very little money.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How do you integrate the gratitude when there is a deep loss. I don't mean the superficial loss. I was talking with a friend who became a paraplegic
yes.
in an automobile accident. How then?
So the question is how, in terms of, you know, when there's been a serious loss, how do you integrate the idea of gratitude into this idea of longing? You mentioned a friend who became paraplegic after an accident. There's a number of answers to that question, potentially. I don't know how it is for any one individual. But what I just said just now is very important, is that some of people's issues of... People have very strong... all of us, you know, have very strong ideas that we operate on about who we are, our identity, what we need to do in order to be a successful person, what we need to be able to get and accomplish. And when those things are challenged... We feel quite miserable, difficult. So you know, if your sense of happiness in life depends on a particular job, and you lose the job, some people it becomes really, really difficult, suicidal. Some people because their whole sense of meaning in life was dependent on that job, or if someone's life was dependent on a certain kind of looking, you know, a certain kind of way. And then something, an accident happens, or sickness happens, perhaps aging happens, and not to you. And then our appearances are different, and if that's real challenging if our identity is so tied to it. So something like paraplegic, you know, my heart goes out to a person like that. But they also probably had, before their accident, all kinds of things they were attached to. Identity issues, accomplishment, how they fit into society. And it's very very tender and difficult to tell them, you know, maybe you should look at those. But a lot of people who have serious transitions, difficulties in life, if they get through it in a way that's kind of healthy, often end up looking at that. And I've known people who've looked back and said, I'm really grateful for that because I was so attached to being a certain way. I had no idea there was another way of being. I had no idea, to be relaxed and open and present and, you know, and be so simple. I was holding on to so many things I thought I could accomplish and do. And there's something to be said about not getting what you want. It's a really important thing, and because if you got what you want, you'd want more. Or if you get what you want, you don't question it. You don't question the assumptions and the identity and the issues behind it. But sometimes if you don't get what you want, you're kind of forced to look and deal. And if you're lucky, if you look carefully, you'll see what you're holding on to. Maybe it's not necessary to hold on to. So I've known people with serious transitions like this, and it's a while. It takes a while. It can be inner wrestling, inner kind of struggle to deal with the various beliefs and thoughts and feelings that are related to it. But I've known people who've done sometimes the deep inner wrestling to find out how to let go and see life anew in situations like that. And I remember meeting many years ago, it was a Vipassana student who was paraplegic. And he had started his own, he was a happy man. He said that he was always in pain, but he'd figured out how to cut off his pain, separate himself from his lower part of his body. And he, as far as I could tell, he was a happy man, but he was also a very, very much involved. And he'd set up a non-profit to go and train fire departments and emergency personnel in counties in Northern California when they go into a house where they've been called for 911, someone is dying or just died. How to treat the situation with some reverence and care, as opposed to going in there and treating it like an emergency, and they bring in all their equipment and loud and boots and they kind of bang around and they carry the corpse out and they feel like they have to do everything they can do, but they're already dead. In that situation, it's better for the family if it wasn't treated like an emergency. So he did this. In his wheelchair, he'd go around, to different counties, and he would set up these trainings. So I don't know if I'm going on and on here, but So this, you know, it's a good question. So this, so part of the mindfulness practice is to help with this, is to do the inner reflection and the inner work that one needs to discover what's going on and what we are thinking about, what we are attached to, what we are driving us, and seeing what can we let go of, what can we shift and change, and no matter how serious, I think no matter how serious the challenge is, it's possible to come to a different relationship to it. And you remember the quote that I read, it said here that people who are grateful, I guess to begin with, go through transitions much easier. Yes?
So I like your line, aging happens. And I don't want to jinx myself, but one of the things I'm grateful for is having lived as long as I have, because it's given me a different perspective and it's allowed me access to the Dharma teachings. And a lot of the people I know haven't lived as long as I have already. And so I'm really grateful for that, because it gives you a different perspective than I think I could have had 10 or 20 years ago.
Uh-huh. So part of the condition for your gratitude is also kind of some sensitivity, some awareness of what it would be like if you hadn't had this time, hadn't had this access to teachings like this, and that contrast makes you, wow, this, you're lucky.
On a lighter note, I rode my bicycle in today, and when you ride your bike, you have a much different relationship with the asphalt. And Redwood City re-tarred their whole downtown and put new bike lanes on Broadway. And I was really appreciative of the new bike lanes and the new asphalt, particularly.
So you came here grateful already for the asphalt before I mentioned it.
That's right, I did. But I didn't quite realize I did. But yeah.
Yes, Jim? Or? Go ahead. Go ahead.
I think the condition for my gratitude tends to be not being grateful, which I'd like to change that dynamic. But like last couple of days, I've just been dissatisfied with all sorts of stuff. And I think I was just rushing around too fast. But like this morning, I woke up and it was like, this has to change. And just that, I don't know, conviction sort of set off the troubleshooting mind state that, oh yeah, you know, there's all this stuff that I'm grateful for. So it does work, but that's a little inefficient. Be better if I could, I don't know, hold that a little bit more consistently.
Thank you. So then pass it down here to Jim. Where's the other mic?
The Christian tradition has the concept of the prodigal son, that we are grateful for something when it's been removed and then returned. And it seems so simple and obvious, but it still surprises me how powerful it is. I mean, why we couldn't simply appreciate it when it was there, but it works. And I had shoulder surgery Monday, and it was about 4 days until I was able to, you know, sleep comfortably and digest food. And there was one point where I was lying in bed about 3 a.m., and I found a comfortable spot that I could lie in. Nothing hurt, and I realized that I was going to go back to sleep. Now, that could happen every night, but I never noticed it because it happened every night.
Please, go ahead.
I wanted to sort of ask about the idea of, I feel like too often in my life when I'm grateful for something, it's a comparison to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a friend who is about my age, you know, relatively young, and she's had Crohn's disease since she was 12. She's in the hospital all the time, getting transfusions. It's really, I mean, it's been amazing to sort of watch her deal with it. I mean, she's a pro. But at the same time, every time I hear about something that's, you know, she had to go to the ER again or whatever, I'm like, oh, thank God that I don't, you know, I don't have to deal with this. And I that feels, I mean, there's an element, and then it feels a little shameful that I'm feeling that. So I guess my question is how, I don't know, is that something I should be shameful about, or is there another way, is there another way to sort of position that in your mind, or you know, not do the sort of comparison dichotomy of I am higher than, lower than, better than, healthier than, and I guess how do you reframe that?
It's a great question. I appreciate that a lot. And I don't know if I have a good answer for you. Certainly, I think the only thing that's necessary is to feel shame at all. And sometimes people are shamed into gratitude. You know, you just think about those people and, you know, how much you have. And I, you know, that sense of obligatory gratitude like that, I don't think is healthy. And certainly feeling shame. But I could feel there is a kind of poignancy or kind of awkwardness or tension between you feeling kind of grateful that you have a good situation and your friend who's in so much difficulty. And so there's something, I think it speaks well for you that you'd feel some awkwardness, some tension there, some, you know. I don't think you should stop feeling grateful for what you have. But maybe acknowledge it's a little bit feels a bit funny for you to feel that way and uncomfortable. But probably for your friend, you know, feel your gratitude, certainly. But maybe if you feel some awkwardness that you should feel this in relationship to your friend, in that awkwardness, rather than feeling shame, be inspired to just feel compassion for your friend. Turn your gratitude, the benefits you've gotten. Maybe you can just, you know, give, you know, offer a little more friendship to your friend. So who has the, yes, where's the mic? Oh, yes, please.
Yes.
You can move the mic back.
There, right when back. I started doing my gratitude list, I only had 5 things that I would repeat. And thank you for having a job, my car, and a house. And then I would think of anything. I couldn't think anything else. That I would just repeat the same thing. And gradually, as I practiced doing my, just writing it every night, 5 things before I go to bed, I came up with more things. Now, even if I'm outside, I will, you know, I will be grateful for the traffic light, or, you know, thank you for those little leaves on the sidewalk, or you know, a little child is going by, their smile, just be grateful for that. And now I'm being grateful for the negative things and those complaints in my life.
Because?
You know, the health issues. Because I learned how to grow out
from
of
them.
It. And I'm grateful for all of those negative things that I used to complain about. Now I'm grateful for them.
Beautiful. So, you know, whatever you regularly think about becomes an inclination. So, did you have some in back there? And then I saw a hand, and then you could be the last one. Why don't you go ahead since you're holding it?
Couple conditions that help me be grateful. One is mindfulness. When I'm running around helter skelter and my mind is flashing every which way and the monkeys are jumping up and down, I can be mindful of that, and I realize I just stop and I look around the room and whatever they're photographs, wherever I am in my office or at home, or I'm grateful for that, and I just take a breath.
Beautiful.
The other condition is fresh air. When I go out for a walk, I'm immediately like in a different space. Mm-hmm. And I see the trees, and the trees are reaching for the sky like in gratitude, and I just feel the same.
Thank you. So then the last one here.
So this concept of gratitude, I actually have found it to be extremely powerful, and is one of the things that I very much appreciate. And one of the places where I found that it's really useful to think about is as you enter a conversation, perhaps with a difficult person or a person who you've been in conflict with, to sit for 1 second, 2 seconds, and think about 3 or 4 things about this person that you're grateful for, and begin the conversation. It changes the whole equation and the ground on which you stand. Maybe it doesn't change the other side, but it changes your ground.
Beautiful.
And if you can conclude the conversation with 1 or 2 thoughts of gratitude, it often changes the relationship in a very substantial way. Done over several times, it can change the whole relationship.
Beautiful. Thank you. So, partly I wanted to talk about gratitude because it felt like gratitude felt more poignant for me with this time of year, kind of coming to the end of the year, and somehow, you know, reflecting over the year and this transition that we've invented for ourselves with going into the new year, for in the kind of Gregorian calendar at least, that, you know, it's a good time to remember gratitude. There's a few things I wanted to say about being grateful for. One is, certainly I'm very grateful for this community here and for all of you, and to the fact that people come here and meditate and practice and engage in the Dharma is a beautiful thing. And I benefit from it. I'm very grateful for all of you and to share the practice with you and be able to do it all year and so many years here. It's a beautiful thing. I think it's all, you know, I think my in my ideal world, all of you would have some gratitude for the others in the room here. The fact that, you know, even though it's crowded and full and stuff like that, it's kind of special to have so many people with enough like-minded interests that they're willing to sit still like this. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It's a rare thing. Even if the person next to you fidgeted. And the other is, you know, to make something like this possible, there's a lot of people who volunteer. You know, here at IMC, it's only volunteers. It's run by volunteers. There's no paid staff. And it's a lot of volunteers who have make this possible. And it might be nice for everyone if perhaps those of you who volunteer here now, those of you and who have volunteered in the past, could you stand?
No, if we can't.
Somebody can't. So thank you very much, all of you. And it's a beautiful thing to support your community this way and support yourself this way by the community. And some of you didn't stand, who I know have done things. So maybe, I don't know why. Shy, or you don't think what you do counts. But, so thank you.